So welcome to part two of our shiurim on Birkat HaMazon, on benching. And as I had said in the previous year, there's really, you know, there's literally books written on benching, like entire books. So to condense that into just two lectures, two shiurim, is obviously impossible to do it fully justice. But we thought we would try to pick some of the more basic, foundational topics, both that introduce the premises and the foundations of benching, which is what we spent time last week discussing. Where does benching come from? Is it a Torah obligation? Which parts of it are Torah obligation? The words, the brachos, different themes. That was last week's shiur. And today I would like to do three things. Even the three, it'll be hard to finish them all in an hour, but we will, bli neder. And there's still things we are leaving out, but I think given the goal of two shiurim as an overview and our audience, I think that these are the right choices. I want to speak about three topics today. One is the obligation of women in benching. Is there any reason that benching would be different for women? And are there any differences between men and women? And if so, why? And number two and three are the issues which I mentioned last week, which is I think that in many ways some of the most interesting questions in the halachos of benching are also unfortunately some of the more common issues, which are when people forget. As I mentioned, in my house, this is a constant struggle. I'd like to think only with my children, but I think sometimes with the parents as well, we forget. And we're all trying to be better at that. But this is not one of those things where it's like, you know, Birkat HaChama, once every 20-something years, you know, you need to know the halacha. Like, you know, forgetting benching and what are the halachos of that, that could be, you know, a few times a week kind of thing, theoretically. Hopefully not, but it's common enough that I think we should be familiar. So what I'd like to do is break that down into the second and third parts of today's shiur, which is how long do you have to bench? Which is not only if you forget and you remember, what about long meals, things like that? And then number three will be, what if you change places? Or can you, you know, you remember and you're, you know, 20 minutes away? Or what about if you are, you know, starting your meal in one place, but you like to go to a Sheva Brachos down the block or something like that. So those are the three topics that we'll discuss. I'm sure there are things we're not going to get to in the wide world of benching that you might be curious about. But these are the three topics that I think, I hope we can, in a very learned way, get through today. So if you take a look at, for those of you who have a source sheet, and if not, please share and sit next to someone who does. In source number one, this is the basis of the entire discussion of women and benching. And the Mishnah tells us in source number one, this is in Brachot, Daf Chaf, very directly, unequivocally, women and Nashim are chayavin, not only in tefillah, davening, not our topic, although I'm sure we'll have a series on that, but women are chayavin davening, mezuzah, if a woman would live on her own in a house, she has to have a mezuzah, and for our purposes, Birkat HaMazon. Women are obligated to bench. Now, based on what we saw last week, or your broader knowledge of benching, this is so unsurprising as to actually beggar the question, why do you even need to tell me? Right? Why wouldn't you think, why wouldn't women be chayav in benching? The pasuk says, v'yachalta v'savata uveirachta. Women know how to eat, women know how to become full, and therefore presumably women would be obligated. So there is actually a havamina. The Gemara thinks maybe somehow benching is time bound, but the Gemara really rejects that pretty quickly. And then the Gemara explains in the end of the first line, going into the second line, the only question, although this, as we shall see, doesn't really ever get fully resolved, the only question is not whether women are obligated or not. Obviously, women would be obligated in benching every much is a man. The only question, says the Gemara, if you look at the end of the first line, is what's the level of the obligation? Nashim b'brekat ha-mazon de'oraisa or derabanan mai? Is it possible that women are obligated in benching, but only rabbinically? Now, even that, we have to try to understand why would that be? Why wouldn't they be obligated midaraisa? Again, the pasuk says, v'yachalta, v'savata, uveirachta. Eat full, and then say thank you to God. So if that's the case, what would even be the havamina? Before we get to try to answering that question, we really should address a second question, which is, who cares? I often get this question, which is, you're going to give me all the academic, the details, is this up? Do I have to do it or not? And it's clear in the Gemara and the Mishnah, women have to bench. So you'll tell me it's on the level of a Daraisa, you'll tell me it's on the level of... The accountant in the sky needs to know how much credit to give me, but I need to know if I have to bench. And I have to bench, so what's the difference? That's the Gemara's question. So there's going to be two answers to that, and the first is what the Gemara itself answers, which if you take a look on the second line, the Gemara considers the possibility, could a woman actually bench, let's say out loud, and be motzi her husband, or a man? Right? Could the woman be the chazanit, so to speak, for benching to obligate people? And the Gemara begins by quoting a brisa, it's in the second line, which says, yes, isha mevarechet leba'ala. A woman could be motzi, her husband, in benching. And the initially, at least, it certainly seems like what that is indicating is what? The woman must be obligated daraita, no less than a man. Therefore, a woman can be motzi, her husband, or theoretically any other man, but this is a PG-rated shiur, so we'll just speak about her husband, okay? So, the Gemara is not 100% convinced that that would be true. After all, the Gemara says that in that same braita that says that a woman could be motzi her husband, it mentions a child being motzi his father. So, something is a little bit, that's surprising. So, how do we understand that? So the Gemara explains on the third line that what we're talking about is a case, and this is something we mentioned last week, that even though we say benching is a Torah obligation, that really is only if you are visavata, if you're full. Let's say you just have a little bit, half a piece of bread or something, you have a very small amount of bread. Let's even assume it was a kazayas, but you're not full. So there we say that's only a rabbinic obligation to bench. So the Gemara says that must be the case. How could an under bar mitzvah age boy bench for his father? His father's listening, his father says amen, but the underage boy benched. Right? This could happen in either one of two cases, easily envisioned. Either maybe the father's a Baal Tshuva, doesn't know yet Hebrew, or the father's very sick. Right? I mean, you don't need corona, but when people who are pretty sick in corona, but again, not God forbid, really, really, really sick, there were people who just were too weak to daven, too weak to bench. So people, and there are plenty of other medical conditions where this happens as well, loved ones sit near the bed and they would bench for them. So let's say this boy is benching for his father. He barely ate anything. He's not really full. So the Gemara says that would probably be the case. Well, if that's the case for the son, the under bar mitzvah age boy, maybe the Gemara says that you don't have a proof about the wife, about women, because maybe when the Braisa had said that a woman could be motzi her husband, it was only referring to what? Also a case where the husband had really barely eaten anything. So maybe that doesn't tell me one way or the other. So in case you're confused, that's exactly the point. Sometimes that's a bug, sometimes that's a function. It's not clear. It's not clear at the end of the Gemara what is the resolution. Now, before we figure out, bottom line, what does all this mean, let's take one more step back, which is, one second, why should, as I previously mentioned, but now we're going to answer the question, why should this be a question at all? Why wouldn't you think that women be obligated exactly the same way as men? V'yachalta, v'savato, v'erachta. So here we actually have two different theories for why women might not be obligated in the same way as men. And this is a machloket between no less than Rashi in source number 2 and Tosafot in source number 3. And this goes back again to, even though I said you don't have to have been at last week's shiur to understand today, because that's where we're going, only a few touch points, but on those few touch points I'm reviewing anyway, but this is something that we discussed last week, which is that in the themes of benching, one of them, Rashi points out, we know this is, right, Aha Aretz, Aval Hamazon, right? Our second bracha. It's not just thanking Hashem for the food, Hazanas Hakol, but if you're eating in London or New York or Australia or anywhere else, we're always thanking Hashem Al Haaretz Aval Hamazon, also for Eretz Yisrael. That's one of the Daraisa obligations for benching. It doesn't matter where you are. So says Rashi, source number 2, given the fact that Aretz, part of the integral part of benching, is no matter where you are, you have to thank Hashem for Eretz Yisrael. Hashem gave us Eretz Yisrael. Ha'aretz lo nitna l'nekevot l'hitchalek. Right? As we know from the famous story with Benos Tzolofchad, or other stories, in the traditional Jewish conception, right, you grow up as part of a Shevet. You're from Shevet Levi. You're from, take that back, not Levi, let's not use Levi. I'm Levi, so that was a Freudian mistake. Shimon, Ephraim, whatever. So you grow up in your parents' home, that's fine. You have a, then you get married, Meretz Hashem, and then whichever tribe you are marrying it, either you stay within your tribe or not, that family has land, and then you as the woman of the house are part of that family. But as an independent entity, as a single woman, the Torah didn't have women inherit land, right? That's the whole story with Benos Tzolofchad. So says Rashi, all the Jewish people got the land, but to say specifically that the land was given to women, Rashi thinks maybe that's not true for women, and therefore they can't say that bracha, that, you know, thanking you Hashem for giving me the land. I have the land as a part of a unit of Am Yisrael, but not me as a female. That's Rashi's theory. So leave aside any modern sensibilities which might be rubbed the wrong way. Leave aside, that's not our topic at all. But the Rishonim already say that's not so persuasive. Because guess who else didn't get portions in the land? Me! Well, you think you're better than me? I'm a Levi. I also got nothing. What about a Kohen? So says Tosfot and others, that can't be the thing. No one ever dreamed that a Kohen or a Levi is not obligated to bench. No one ever dreamed that a Kohen or a Levi couldn't bench and be Motzi or Yisrael, someone from Shevet Shimon. However Rashi would answer that, we don't have time to get into it. That's Rashi's theory, but that's why it may not be the most persuasive theory. And therefore, in source number 3, Tosfos gives a different theory, which is, as we also saw last week, in addition to the primary theme of Aretz, in that same bracha, Nodev Alakol, what else do we have to mention? Themes of, and as Tosfos quotes it, we also have to say in benching, Al Brischa Shechasamta Bivsarenu, Val Tarascha Shilimaratanu. It's important to mention Mila, we mentioned the mitzvah of Bris Mila in benching, and we also mentioned the obligation of Torah. And as we saw last week, the reason is, whatever the ultimate rationale is, but the bottom line is, that somehow Mila and Torah are part of the Zuchus, the merit that give us Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in the bracha, where we thank Hashem for the food in Eretz Yisrael, we also have to include Torah and Mila. So says Tosos, maybe that's why women would be only obligated to Rabbanan. Because since those are also integral parts of benching, and a woman is not obligated in Bris Mila, and as you know, women do not have the same level of obligation in learning Torah as men, maybe that's the reason why women would also not be obligated in benching. So we don't know for sure what the answer is, but al-Hatzad, as we say, on the possibility that women have a lesser obligation than men, at least now we know why they would. What would be the reason to even consider it? That women would have a less obligation? The answer is either because of the Eretz Yisrael inheritance thing, or I think more persuasively, because of either the Talmud Torah and the Bris Mila thing. Which of course begs the question the other side. Well, if that's the reason why women would have lesser obligation, why is there another opinion in the Gemara that says that women are obligated just as much as men? That was the first opinion in the Gemara. That opinion also knew that women are not obligated in Bris Mila or in Talmud Torah. And this seemingly obvious answer, which many Mefarshim give, is because we're not saying in benching, I'm obligated to learn Torah. I'm obligated in Bris Mila. We're saying the Jewish people were obligated in Bris Mila. The Jewish people have a bris through Torah and through Mila. And it's in the zechut of those mitzvos that connect us. Alternatively, it may also be that women can still play an integral role, not only in making sure the bris takes place, but as we also know when it comes to learning Torah, what's another reason? Because women are obligated to learn Torah. Not the same way as men, not the same quantity of Torah, but what are women obligated to learn? About the mitzvos that they're obligated in, which just happened to be about 607 out of 613. It's an incredibly small number of mitzvos which are gender-specific. I'm not saying there are none. Of course, there are some. But there's a much bigger discrepancy of, do you live in Israel or outside of Israel? Are you a Kohen or not a Kohen? Are you in the base of Migdash? There are plenty of mitzvos that not all Jews are obligated in. But all things being equal, if it's just a question of gender, it is an incredibly, incredibly small number at the end of the day, which we say women are not obligated the same way as men are. But, and Talmud Torah is generally considered one of those. But even that is not 100% true. Because, as I said, we assume that women are obligated. There's a chiyuv to know the laws of benching. Whether you came to this year or you learned it another way. You as a woman have to know the laws of benching, just like I have to know the laws of benching. And you have to know the laws of tefillah and all the other things, like everything, virtually, that are equally applicable to you. So one way or the other, that seems to be the debate. Now the bottom line is, let's get tachlis here, so we can move on to our other topics. What is the bottom line? Now that I know what the ping pong back and forth is about, obligated, not obligated, Bris Mila, Torah, Israel, okay. Tell me, bottom line, Rabbi, am I obligated or not? So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch punts. Shulchan Aruch just can't make up his mind. On the one hand, he says, Nashim Chayavot B'Birkat HaMazon, source number 4. Okay, that the Mishnah already told us. Women must bench. But says the Shulchan Aruch, I'm just not sure. Saveku Im Hein Chayavos Midaraisa O Enun Chayavos Ela Midrabanan. And Shulchan Aruch brings down quite clearly, and what would be the difference? So what's the difference, Rabbi? Could a woman be motzi her husband, or theoretically any other man? If she's obligated to daraita, she could. If she's obligated to be in a Rabbanan, in a typical case, she would not be able to. Why is the Shulchan Aruch unsure? Because even though I didn't give it to you, because I knew it would take us too long, it's a huge machloket in the Rishonim. How to read the Gemara? What's the conclusion of the Gemara? At the end of the Gemara, how do we decide? We're not really sure. There's different opinions. And this is one of those rare cases where the Shulchan Aruch himself cannot resolve it. So take a look. If the Shulchan Aruch didn't resolve it, let's see if we can go further. Take a look, source number 5 and 6, the Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha. You know, some of you I'm sure do, but for those who don't, just to review, the Mishnah Berurah was not his name, actually, when he was a kid, and he didn't clean up his clothes, because I'm sure he didn't, and when he made fun of his little sister, which I'm sure he did, because he was a normal kid, his mother didn't say, Mishnah Berurah, pick up your clothes. Now, what was his name?
He didn't say
Chavetz Chaim either, right. Yisrael Meir HaKohen. Yisrael, I don't know what she called him, Surly. This much information we don't have. But I do know she didn't call him Mishnah Berurah. Right? But he wrote, right? This is one of our idiosyncrasies. We call people after their famous books. And if you're somebody like Yisrael Meir HaKohen, you have a lot of famous books. So you could call him the Mishnah Berurah, you could call him the Chafetz Chaim. Right? So in the Mishnah Berurah, though, which is the term we use, there's actually three different components that he wrote. One is the Mishnah Berurah, but in source number 6, the Bir Halacha, that's also the Mishnah Berurah, it's the same author. It's just a different style, it's more in-depth essays, but it's in the same book. You buy a book of Mishnah Berurah, you open it up, you see the different sections, so that's just a little background information for you. But what does he say? We'll call him the Mishnah Berurah here. Source number 5, he quotes from earlier Achronim who say, listen, first of all, you should know there's another Nafgamina. And this is more relevant to you, because let's be honest, when's the last time you benched for your husband? And hopefully he should live and be well and be healthy, you don't have to do it anytime soon. What's a much more practical issue? If you're not sure, Savig, you know, raise your hand if you've never had that, right? That happens to everybody. You can't remember, did I bench, didn't I bench? So what do? Do you go back or not? And we know the rule. What's the usual rule? If it's a Torah obligation, Savig arise of the Chumra, you'd have to go back. If it's a Rabbani, you don't. So now we need to know. Now the rubber hits the road. Now we need to know, is a woman obligated midoraita or midorabanan? That's going to have a huge consequence for any case when she's not sure if she benched or not. Does she have to go say benching just in case? Or can she just assume that it was okay? So that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. And source number 5. And he's quoting the Shar Ephraim. That's one of the earlier Achronim. Ephraim Zalman Margolios. Isha she'achla k'dei sviya nistapke im bircha. She's not sure. Again, this happens all the time to people, men and women. So says the Shar Ephraim, chayeves levarech. A woman who's not sure, we basically assume in our kishkes, in our guts, says the Shar Ephraim, that she's obligated no less than men, and therefore, you want equality, you get equality of obligation. You're obligated just in case to be machmir, and to repeat pension when you're not sure. That's his opinion. However, he continues and says, others disagree. Take a look at Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Birkei Yosef, second line, they say no. Einu tzarach levarech, because he thinks that it's probably only the Rabbanan. So if we would stop here, we have gone no further. This is what I think my wife sometimes feels whenever I give a shiur. You're doing a lot of running in place. A lot of movement, but we haven't gotten anywhere. Right? You know, you're sweating. You're working hard. I see it. But where'd we go? We didn't get anywhere. Lots of shitas. We're still in the same place. We're not sure. At least now we know a second and more common application of the question. But we don't yet really have a resolution. So for this, thankfully, the Mishnah Berurah himself helps us. We look at the last line where it's underlined. He says, nevertheless, mikol makom, bottom line, nira d'harotza lisma chodash ha'afrayim v'siyato, ein limchos biyado. And we won't have time to read it, but more or less he says the same thing again in source number 6. In other words, bottom line, here we go, listen carefully, here's the bottom line. It seems to me, as I understand the Mishnah Berurah, the Bir Halacha, bottom line, if a woman is unsure about whether she benched or not, she has a right not to bench. At the end of the day, since there's at least a chance that it's only Derabanan, we can rely on that if a woman doesn't want to bench. Nevertheless, said the Mishnah Berurah, I love the way he formulated it. He says, again, let's read it again, that last few words, if a woman wants to bench, ein limcho biyado, which is to say, I think that many people, again, not everybody, that's why it's important to know, but many people would look at me the same way Alyssa was looking at me. It's like, really? But like, what if I want to be? Like, and that's what says the Mishnah Berurah. You don't say a woman shouldn't bench. Maybe it's a bracha l'batala. Savak brachas l'hakel. No, we're not convinced that she shouldn't bench. But if for whatever reason it's too difficult to go back, she doesn't want to go back, so I don't have that option. You have that option. But you also have, you have all the gain and none of the risk. If you don't go back, it's okay. And if you want to bench again, tavo aleich bracha, even better. But you don't have to go back, but if you want to, you certainly can. But Shlomo Zalman Orbach, I saw quoted, he was even a little bit stronger than the Mishnah Berurah. He thinks, again, not you're obligated, but he thinks it's a good idea. Women ought to go back if they're not sure, for the simple reason, a psychological insight. And especially if you'll add, if this happens to you, you know, with any level of frequency, if you don't go back on those kind of cases, Shlomo Zalman's worried that psychologically you could come to be mezalzel in benching. It's as if you're kind of telling yourself either that benching is not important or I'm not really obligated, come on. If I was really obligated, the rabbi would make me go back. And he's just worried about the kind of long-term downstream subliminal message you're giving yourself about benching. Right? You could take it or leave it, but that's what Shlomo Zalman thinks. It's not just like if you want, you could go back. He's a little bit stronger than the Mishnah Berurah. He thinks really a woman ought to. If she didn't, so I really did something, as a man, I did something wrong. As a woman, you have what to rely on. So again, you're in a much more privileged position than a man in this case. You have all the upside and none of the downside. Okay, and that seems to be the conclusion at the end, at least for Ashkenazi women. It's a general rule in the world of brachos, including benching, but it's a general rule about brachos. Sephardi poskim are much, much more nervous about Shem Hashem Levatala. So anytime there's any kind of question, for men or for women, for example, Rav Avad Yosef is always saying, you don't have to bet, you don't have to, no, no, don't worry. And that's exactly what the Rav Avadja and the Yalki Yosef, his son of Yitzchak Yosef, they feel if a woman is in doubt, go without. Don't do it, because maybe, depending on this shita and that shita, maybe she's not obligated, and it could be maybe a shayla with the Rabbanon and a bracha levatala. So that would be the psak for a woman who follows Sephardi Masora, as far as I know, at least from Rav Avadja. But the Ashkenazi approach, you have the Mishnah Berurah and Rosh Shlomo Zalman going even further. You're not obligated to go back if you're not sure, but you may, or in Rosh Shlomo Zalman, you're even encouraged to go back. Okay? Any questions just on this issue of women and cases of doubt? We're good? Fantastic! Okay, now, one more thing. Just as an FYI, I'll do this very quickly, because I think it would surprise you, to know that, how do we get into this whole mess? We walked in, assuming women are obligated in benching, and now we spent 15 minutes realizing I'm still obligated, because I ran a lot in place and didn't get anywhere. I got that look from my wife. But at the end of the day, I now know that's a little more, you know, I did schwitz a little bit. We did exercise our mental muscles the last 15 minutes. We now know it's a little more complicated than we thought, right? So the answer is another surprise for you. Source number 7, the Ramah, there at the end of source number 7, he says, how do we get started in this? Because of the issue of, well, maybe women aren't obligated in Torah and in Bris Milah, and maybe that's why they wouldn't be obligated in benching. Okay, but now that we said women may really well be obligated in benching, or more than that, everyone agrees it's rabbinically a woman has to bench. The only question was in doubt. And so says the Ramah, yeah, but you know what? When women bench, they shouldn't say the words, Abrishsach Shasamtu Visarenu Vatrasa Shemaratana. They should leave that out. Did you know that? This is probably a shock to most people. The Ramah says, source number 7, Nashim Lo Yomru Bris V'Torah. Now, the reason you never heard of it is because that's not our practice. You haven't been doing anything wrong your whole life. Your whole life you've been saying it. Keep on saying it. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah points out in source number 8. Mikamakom Biyameinu Nagu Nashim Lomar Gamkein. Women say the exact same benching as men. There's no, you know, a women's bencher and men's bencher, it's the same bencher. Svardim never even went through this process. They point out that Rav Shulchan Aruch never said otherwise. Of course, the women, Shulchan Aruch thinks the women say the same thing as men. But apparently, the Ramah thought, no. Not only is that a reason maybe women are obligated, but they shouldn't even say the words because it's not true. How could a woman say, just think of the word, just, you know, again, we should know what we're saying when we say things. How could a woman say, Al brischa shechasamta bivsarenu? There's no bris on my body. Right? There's no Torah that I'm obligated. So again, the Mishnah Berurah points out, so why is our minhag that you say the same benching as I do? Because I mentioned previously, because women are beneficiaries of the mitzvah bris milah. They're connected to their child's milah anyway. And when it comes to Torah, as the Mishnah Berurah himself says, number one is you can either look at it as women are thanking Hashem for giving the Jewish people the Torah, even if they weren't obligated to study it. Moreover, as I said, and the Mishnah Berurah said, we'll just read this inside, just so you should see it. I wasn't faking it. The last line of source number 8, V'od gam hanashim tzrichos lilmod. Women do have an obligation to learn, at least specifically, mitzvah shelahen. How are you supposed to know how to daven, how to keep Shabbos, how to keep kosher, how to keep taras hamishpacha if you don't learn? Of course you have to learn. Okay? So given all of that, the bottom line is we are exactly where you were probably when you came in. We just exercised our intellectual muscles a little bit. You are obligated to bench. It's a little bit of a question what the level of the obligation is. Practically speaking, when might that even make a difference? Only if you're not sure, and or the rare case where you want to be mostly a man. And in those cases, we're still a little bit hedging. It seems to be machlokes. The Mishnah Berurah and Ashkenazim lean towards be machmir on yourself and do it. And Sephardim are a little bit more cautious about that. Okay, so now we're really, really done. Ad kan hakafa aleph. Okay, next.
Sorry.
Yes, of course.
If you forget what to say on Shabbos.
Yes.
So you'll have to repeat.
Yes.
So is that the same?
Yes, I think so. I think a woman should absolutely go back. Yes. Yes. Good. Yes. Very good question. Very good question. Okay. Let's go to, we have two more issues we want to get to in 30 minutes to do it. How long can you wait? Right? People get distracted. I can imagine a million scenarios, some of them more legitimate, like 7 kids, jumping off the roof and fighting and, or the phone rings. And other times we're just careless, right? All of us have our moments. So what are the obligations, what are the parameters of how long you can wait? So let's try to go through this thoroughly, but a little quicker than we were before this. Says the Mishnah, source number 9. You know how long? Kedei sheyitachel hamazon. As long as the food is still being digested, not to gross anybody out, but as long as you're still digesting the food, you can still bench. Once you've already fully digested, it's too late. Okay, who wants to tell me how long that is? I don't know, nobody knows, right? Exactly. Certainly in the time of the Mishnah, there's no way they knew with some precision, right? So the Gemara is aware of that. The Gemara says, source number 10. Well, how long exactly? How are we supposed to know? So the Gemara says, very simple in, way of determining it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol zman she'enu ra'ev. If you're not hungry. Once you're hungry, we can assume that you digested the food, right? That's the Gemara's. Okay, well, this is not a science class. We're not in medical school now. This is what the Gemara says. Okay? We'll see exactly what that means in a moment, but it's slightly more nuanced than it appears, but basically it is what it appears. Kol she'ein ra'ev, if you're not hungry. Then the Gemara quotes a second opinion, which is not clear, because again, nothing is ever clear. Welcome to Torah. Is not clear if this is a disagreeing or agreeing, but the Gemara quotes a second opinion that actually gives a time limit, gives a time frame. However long it would take to walk, arba meal. A meal is not exactly a mile, but it's actually not that far off. And basically, this is what is calculated, as you've heard in Hilchos Shabbos and other areas. This is the term that's used that basically is interpreted as 72 minutes. 72 minutes. Okay? So the Gemara initially thinks maybe that's a machloket, and then the Gemara has a very unclear resolution. Says the Gemara, maybe it depends if you had a big meal or a small meal. But which one is which? Not 100% clear. So we've seen where it comes from. It's a Mishnah and a Gemara. We have a basic sense that it has something to do with digestion, and maybe there's a time frame, but we're not 100% clear. So we take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, and he'll tell us. North source number 11. How long do you have to bench until the food is digested? In the Socratic method, the Shulchan Aruch says, where it's underlined, the Kamashiro, and how long does it take for food to be digested? Calls him on train to rave. Okay, we haven't progressed from the Gemara. But then Shulchan Aruch adds, very important, umishash, second line, umishash hitchil liyo ra'ev. This is based on an opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah. He says it doesn't mean until you're fully hungry. It means until you start that first pang, after lunch, that first pang, 10, 11 o'clock at night after dinner, where you maybe feel that I want to have a little snack. I'm already thinking about the next meal. Not that I'm fully hungry and starving yet. It doesn't mean that I'm totally hungry or totally dead. It means once I start being hungry. Now, in the reality, it's still pretty hard to figure out when that is. But nevertheless, says the Shulchan Aruch, we're going to obviously have to drill down a little bit in a moment. But if you wanted to stop here for a moment, where were we 400 or 500 years ago? We're up to the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, yes, based on the Mishnah and the Gemara, we assume that the primary opinion is when you digest the food, which means when you get hungry, which does not mean when you're starving. It means when you just start to be already getting that feeling of maybe I'm hungry for the next meal. So take a look at source number 12. Very, very common sense, very, very basic observation of the Aruch HaShulchan. We know even though it could be a little bit of a tongue twister, but the Aruch HaShulchan is not the same as the Shulchan Aruch. That's just a cute play on words. This was written hundreds of years later, in the early part of the 20th century, late 19th century, of Yechiel Michel Epstein, who was a Rav in Navardik. And he was a great, great posek, an older contemporary of the Mishnah Brura, or the Chavetz Chaim, whoever you prefer. And he wrote a very important work of Halacha. And he says right away in source number 12, digestion, hunger, beginning of hunger, anger of hunger, says Aruch HaShulchan, Ube Emet, Kashe L'Shayer Bezeh. How's anyone supposed to figure out what that is? You know, we're a little bit OCD in Halacha. Give me a number, tell me. Each time I'm going to figure out, I'm a little hungry, I'm a lot hungry, I can't figure that out, and I got challenges in that area, and I got new Hilchot Brachos. Right? That's for me and my nutritionist to figure out. Right? Only when you're hungry. Shkoyach. When is that? I'm always hungry. What does that mean? So says the Aruch HaShulchan, Be'emes, Kashe L'Shayer B'Zeh. How are we supposed to figure that out? I'm not really sure. Me, in second line, Mi Yuchal L'Shayer. So who could figure this stuff out? It's very, very tricky. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, as we turn over the page, bottom line, this is what we say as follows. He thinks that by the time we get to the end of the Gemara, we're basically usually using the amount of four meal, which as he tells us there is Sha'av Yudbet Chalke Sha, right? A Sha'an hour and 12 Chalakim. 60 plus 12 is 72 minutes. So he says at the end of the day, again, you could look at this as a quote-unquote Kula or Chumrah. The way he phrases is actually the Chumrah. It's been 30 minutes. I just remembered, oh my gosh, I didn't bench. I'm still hungry, not hungry. I make myself crazy, right? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, up to 72 minutes after you finished your meal. Again, you should bench right away. But if you didn't, up to 72 minutes, you're obligated to bench. Not just can I, not can I. You have to bench. You must bench. Up to 72 minutes, Sarech Levarech. And that is generally how we paskin in all the contemporary Hilchos benching books, Hilchos Brachos books. They'll tell you up to 72 minutes, you absolutely should bench. Now, of course, every rabbi, I saw this in the name of Rosh Zalman Orbach, but you didn't need to be Rosh Zalman Orbach to say this. It says you shouldn't rely on this. No, you know, I have to do something anyway. Let me go out. Let's leave aside the issue of leaving where you were. We'll get to that in a moment. That's our next topic. But you know, I'm in the house anyway. I'm even in the same room. I'm still in the kitchen. But you know, let me wash the dishes now. Let me go do the homework with the kid now because I know I have 72 minutes to bench and I'm still obligated. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan told me. No, don't play that game, right? For the simple reason that what are the overwhelming likelihood is you'll forget, right? Not you, not me, all of us. We'll forget. So of course you shouldn't rely on this ideally. But at the end of the day, if you forget, which is not uncommon, up to 72 minutes in a standard meal, we assume at least that long, we're sure you haven't even started getting hungry yet, right? Then you really have an issue if you're already hungry less than 72 minutes. And then you have to bench. Longer than that is really a shaila, which is you don't want to have to get yourself into, obviously. But what happens if you did? So let's do two more issues in this before we discuss the issue of changing location, and that is the two very more tricky questions, which are super big meals, like the long Shabbos meals, long Sheva Brachas, right? You people sometimes sit at the table for hours, or the small meals. So let's start with the bigger meals. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, I think we were still living in the city when this happened, the first 3 years of our marriage, one of those years, where we had a company over for Shabbos lunch, and they wouldn't leave. Yes, she does remember. We're still traumatized. Everyone's had those guests who just won't leave. I want a nap. I don't have little kids. I can still nap. Get out. They wouldn't leave. They were nice people for the first 3 hours, but after that, it's like, how long? Anyway, so at some point, I got rude. I started sweeping. They didn't get the message. They still didn't leave. I think they're still in the house somewhere. They're probably still in that apartment in Manhattan. Anyway, So whether it's because you have the guests who won't leave, or it's that big family reunion and the Shabbos Sheva Brachos and the Bar Mitzvah or whatever, sometimes meals schlep. You could be sitting at a table, Zmiros, Lashon Hara, whatever you're doing. Everyone's got their minug. A little Lashon Hara goes, you know, a little Lashon Hara sprinkled on top of the Torah and the Zmiros and the board games and the Parsha questions. It's all good, right? Not really, but it's good. Anyway, what do you? It's been 2 hours since we last ate. Right. By the way, this happened a lot to families in Corona. Right. The clock, you know, this is one of the brachos of Corona. Right. People spent time together for the first time in years. All of a sudden, wow, they talked to each other and they were together and no one was running out to go with their friends. It was a different dynamic. So all of a sudden, people had meals that stretched. How long can you bench from those meals? So says the Magen Avraham, source number 13. It's not new to our generation. Lefamim yoshvim dalado hei sha'ot kodem shem avarchim ve'eino nachon. It's not right. You can sit at the table. He's not saying you should get up from the table. But you could bench. No one says you have to get up to the table. But nevertheless, people don't always do that. So he says, I could be matzdik the minute. And that's longer than 72 minutes, for sure. Sometimes people go from the moment they finish eating. Yesh lomar, he says, kevin she'oskin b'shtia parparot kolonet achal dami. He has a tremendous chiddush. He says, it could be people when they're at the table for those lengthy period of times, usually nibbling a little bit. A little, if I just take a little bit at a time, it doesn't count. You know, I can trick my body, a little bit of the cookie, a little bit of the cookie, a little bit more challah, a little bit more challah. Right? People nibble, even drinking a little bit. So says the Magen Avraham, maybe since you're not really eating, it's stretched out over a long period of time, but maybe that's enough to, so to speak, say the clock didn't even start. Because we said 72 minutes after you finish eating, but I didn't finish eating because I'm still nibbling. I'm noshing, while, we do whatever we do. So that's, nevertheless, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, source number 14, he says, listen, nevertheless, he says, you should really try, if you can, not to rely on this. You should try not to rely on that. And if at some point you see, this has happened, I can't say it's happened many times in my life, but I'm trying to remember if it was when I was a host or I was a guest, but I remember there have definitely been times where, either I said or someone said to the table, listen, you're free to stay, we're not going anywhere, but we really should bench. Let's bench now, and then we don't have to worry, it's off our head, and then we could, that really is the better thing to do. If you have one of these really, really long meals, if you were still noshing a little bit, a little while you're hanging out, you have what to rely on. If you weren't even doing that, then you really could get into a shaila that you probably may have missed the window. It might really be too late to bench. So you really should try either to keep on noshing a little bit the whole time, or to make sure to bench before it gets too long. That's the big meals. What about the opposite extreme? Source number 15. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a major machloket. What about if you have a teeny meal? Again, this is by design because you're dieting, or by necessity because who knows whatever the situation is, you didn't have that much. But you had bread, you had at least a kezias, and maybe in the instant moment, for a moment, you filled up. You wasn't like, but it was so little that really within a matter of time, of course you're going to be hungry again. You barely ate. It was bread. It was even two pieces of challah, let's say. But that was it. And then you had to go run, who knows what. So says the Mishnah, is not sure. You might be hungry the second he finished eating. We had said until now, well, you have up to 72 minutes, because until then you're really not going to be hungry. But what if I'm hungry right away? I never really got full. So here the Mishnah Berurah quotes Machloket. Some say 72 minutes is a red line. You never have less than 72 minutes. You always have, that's your magic time. You always have up to 72 minutes. That's the first opinion that he quotes. The second opinion that he quotes is, he's not so sure. Maybe that's not really enough. He not really can't rely on that. So what should you do to avoid the problem? The best thing to do, if you have something like that is, and this would have applied even for the longer meal too, but certainly for the teeny meal, have another kezias of bread. That's like tchias amesim. That revives it. Then you become obligated from, again, so that is the best solution if you could. If you had, again, if you're still in a place where you have a little, the option of having bread, so then have another kezias, and then it's really not a problem. Nevertheless, the Mishnah Berurah does say, bottom line, at the end of source number 15, im ein lo pas, yesh lismach asfar rishona. At the end of the day, bottom line, you open up your Hilchos Brachos book, it'll tell you even if you had no other bread, you had a teeny amount, and you're almost hungry in 15 minutes later you're hungry, 30 minutes hungry, later you're hungry. We still give you the 72 minutes. 72 minutes is kind of the magical thing. I saw in one of the contemporary Sfarim that they said, Rav Yashiv said, you shouldn't go longer than 30 minutes in that kind of a case. Okay, if you want to be machmir, even 30 minutes, but the Mishnah Berurah says 72 minutes, and I think a person has what to rely on. So before we finish this and get to our last topic, let me just summarize, because here we did a lot, but so it's not confusing, and you could have it mesudar in your head. Let's review. If you are definitely still hungry, then you can then you're still obligated to bench. Again, once you're not, then exactly. The opposite extreme, if you're for sure still full. Oh, sorry, I said the opposite. I meant the opposite, sorry. If you're still feeling the fullness of your meal, then for sure you are still able and obligated to bench. If you're for sure not at all, it's gone. So then it's a problem. It's a problem to bench. But most of the cases which are somewhere in the middle are the suffakes. And the suffake cases, again, the best thing would be if you could to have another kazayis of bread, and that kind of resuscitates and starts the clock anew. But if not, up to 72 minutes you have what to rely on. After that, it really is too late. And I can't say it happens too often, thank God, but in my lifetime it has happened where I realized I forgot the bench, I look at the watch, and it was just too late. Sometimes it is just too late. Okay, but and then that's a mistake. That's something you have to do tshuva for. That's why one of the al-chaitz is about, right, is about our brachos and our food. But hopefully we don't. So that's the issue of time. Okay, yes, please.
So just eating the extra kazayis is only within the 72 minutes, after 72 minutes?
If you feel any kind of maybe still full, it could be that it would help. But really, within 72 minutes, the Mishnah Berurah says it's better to do it, but you don't have to do it. If you do, it's for sure better. After that, it's a questionable thing. It's questionable. You really, unless you have one of these long meals where you're nibbling, that you're relying on. But if you just had a normal weekday meal, and then, between this kid and that kid and whatever, and some work phone call or something, and now it's 2 hours later, I don't think you could go take a kazayis of bread and eat it. I think you're just too late. Yeah.
You forget what to say, and you're still in the middle of benching, so you just stop.
You have to go back. Yes, you have to go back. I mean, that's really an entire topic which I'm not going to do justice to now. I had to pick something. We triaged, and I know this is the second question that someone asked about Ritzay, because it's a good, so maybe I should have a third shiur, or whatever. 6 months from now, we'll discuss a Shabbos benching or something about Shabbos things. But I don't want to give you too short shift of an answer, and I don't want to mislead you in any way. But in general, the short answer to Ritzay is, anytime you're obligated to have a meal, if you forget Ritzay, in that case for Shabbos, you have to go back.
Even if you're in the middle of benching, you just stop in the middle of the pasuk and...
Yes, you have to go back.
It's not like you finish what you're
saying. No. If you're already in the middle of benching, you don't have to worry about an extra kazayas or something. You have to go back to Ritzay. You have to absolutely go back.
And do you go back to the beginning?
So that's a separate shiur, okay? I don't want to get into that right now, okay? Anyway, we have 13 minutes left. I think we're on schedule, thank God. Let's finish the last part of the shiur, which is not so much about the timing... But this happens all the time, especially with busy people. It could happen with kids. All the scenarios are easy to envision. We've all experienced them, which is, I was eating somewhere and I ain't there anymore. What do I do? Now I remembered about benching. Uh-oh. So this is source 16 until the end. What do I do? So first of all, it's an interesting... The premise, which we start with, is in source number 16. The premise is a very interesting one. This is from Gemara in Masechet Pesachim, which is discussing, not ironically, but fascinatingly, the question is, if I ate in one place, let's say, for now, let's call it I was having a fruit, and then I didn't make a bracha chrona, and I walked to another place, and I want to have the same fruit again. Do I need to make a new haetz? Okay, now what about if it's cookies? What if it's bread? Do I need to make a new bracha? Because when I made my bracha, I was only in one place, and now I'm in another place. Okay, that's the question the Gemara there is dealing with. But through the back door, the answer of the Gemara is it actually depends on, in a certain sense, benching. That is to say, says the Gemara, it depends. Is this the kind of thing that to make your bracha achrona, you'd have to go back to the original place? If you'd have to go back to the original place to make your bracha achrona, then that means, halachically, maybe even psychologically, but certainly halachically, you've never really left. Since I have to go back to repeat, to say the bracha achrona, I won't need a bracha rishona in the new place, because I'm still connected, there's a continuity with my first portion. If it's the kind of thing where I say, I forgot, but I don't have to go back anyway. So then, ironically, that means that where you are now is totally disconnected from the first place. And it would give you a kula and a chumra. I don't have to go back to for the bracha achrona. It means I do need to break a new bracha rishona if I keep on eating. Now, that's not our topic of a bracha rishona. But what the Gemara is giving us as a principle in source number 16 is, apparently, there are some things where if I change my place, and all of us call shinoi makom, if I change my place, I have to go back to bench, or to finish my bracha achrona, should I say. So I'm already kind of giving... So it's a big debate what foods that applies to. We generally assume that it only applies to benching. So other foods it wouldn't. You wouldn't have to go back. Okay, I'll make my bar nefashos, and probably it would be true about alamichia also in the other place. But if I forgot, it sounds like from this, I might have to go back for benching. Now that would also mean that I don't have to make another hamotzi if I want to keep on eating bread. But I would have to. That's what it sounds like. And sure enough, in source number 18, we have a second Gemara, 17 and 18, which is in fact a machlokes about this. Do I have to go back in benching? So we backed into it because of this bracha rishona discussion, but then we go to Masechet Brachos, source 17, 18, it's very direct. And here you have something very interesting in light of what we just saw. Let's see the Mishnah in source number 17. Mi she'achal v'shakach v'lo birech. And here the assumption is we're talking about benching. You ate bread, you forgot to bench, and now I'm in some other place. I went to work, I went to the park, I went to my friend's house, wherever. Beishamai omrim yachzer lemekomo v'yavarech. Beishamai says, you got to go back. Bench wherever you ate the first time. Beis Hillel omrim, you're not going to win Tzaddik of the Year award for this, but we're not going to make you go back. Yavarech b'makom shenizkar. Just bench wherever you remember. Parentheses, assuming it's not been too long. But the Gemara is assuming that you went to Rabbi Galib Shir, so you already knew all the halachos about the 72 minutes, etc. So that's the mission. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's Beis Shammai who says you have to go back, even though that really kind of sounded like what we were already concluding in source 16. But it's Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says you don't have to go back. So says the Gemara, let's qualify this in source number 18. After all, there are two scenarios, right? With people in this room, I can assume, why didn't you bench in the first place? Are you a bad person? You hate God? Anti-establishment? You forgot. You're human, you forgot. Says the Gemara, in that case, b'shakach, you forgot? That we're not really sure. B'shamay says, but says the Gemara, first of all, you should know, b'mezid. Let's say a person, deliberately, he knew he didn't bench, he knew she didn't bench. But, I gotta go where I gotta go. I'm more important than Hashem. And then, pangs of guilt. And again, there's a million reasons that could happen, but let's take a very common one. Mommy, you didn't bench. Right, thank God that's why Hashem gave us children, that's our conscience. Right? I'm not the first person who said that. I think it was the Chasam Sofer who said, children are like a mirror. You see what, when you look, you'll see the good things, but not always the good things. Right? It's very important. It's very hard. I don't know how people without children have that kind of muster. It's built in. Okay? So, let's say that's the scenario. So then, of course, says the Gemara, b'mezid, even Beis Hillel, everyone says you got to go back. That was wrong. Rectify it. Okay, but that's not really relevant to us, let's be honest, right? So what's much more common for us? You forgot. Innocent mistake, but a mistake. So that, says the Gemara, yes, that's the machloket. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Now, if I were to stop there, what would you assume the halacha would be? Beis Hillel, which is you don't have to go back. But the Gemara, it's a very strange Gemara. I mean, strange in the sense of what we're used to. The Gemara says a story. Where it says that Beis Hillel says to Beis Shammai, like rhetorically, if you were eating in some big tower, and now you're who knows where, and you just remembered, are you telling me, Beis Shammai, you'd have to go all the way back, to the 10th floor? So Beis Shammai responds. Listen carefully. He says, Beis Shammai, I'm paraphrasing, let's read the one line, the bottom of 18. Misha shakach arniki barosh habira, lo yala v'yelana. What if you realize you forgot your watch? You forgot your phone. To forget a phone, the whole world would come tumbling down. Right? If I gave you a choice between your wallet and your phone, it's not clear which one people would choose in today's day and age. Wouldn't you go back, says Beis Shammai? So benching's any less? That's a very powerful argument. Again, we're just surprised that the Gemara seems to be giving Beis Shammai the upper hand. But hey, didn't we always get taught the halachos like Beis Hillel? So it's not 100% clear. So how do we paskin? So let's wrap this up with a few practical rules. Says the Ramah, source number 19, the first thing he says is the easiest point. The obvious point is, you shouldn't really do this. Everyone agrees, no matter what we're going to conclude, this is not the best thing to do. You should bench where you were. Forget whether you could bench in another place. You couldn't bench. You should bench where you ate. That is for sure the best thing. And the Ramah is very practical, because we're worried, Shami Yishkach Milach, right? We're worried you're going to forget. Right? Once you change out of sight, out of mind, different associations, that's the best thing. Okay? That's number one. However, says the Ramah there in the end of source number 19, there are times where we would say it's not a problem. It's not even just forgetting. For example, let's say, and this happens a lot, I know in our community, it could happen in a lot of other communities, you're still davening, you're still eating lunch, and you want to go to early mincha. Can you just get up from the table, go to early mincha, and then come back? Could be other scenarios. The Shulchan, the post, can speak about what used to be very common is people would eat their lunch, and then they'd go over to a neighbor's for Shava Brachos. They'd want to bench there. So it says the Ramah, source number 19, L'tzorech mitzvah overes, kugun shigiyaz man tefilo, or something like that, mutter. For a mitzvah, then it's okay. Then it is okay. Okay? So that's not just about forgetting. Sometimes we even say, L'chachilo, you can go do something and then come back. You shouldn't stam go to hang out with the neighbors. I know there are communities where that happens. Right? Where, again, so it's one thing if you bench, then you go join your neighbor's meal. But you should not do that before you bench. So I have one son who particularly likes to leave our house all the time to go to his preferred family, which are the Platniks. But at least he knows he has to bench before he leaves. So it ends up being, what's the tension in our house? Can we bench, please, so I can go to the Platniks? All right, so this happens a lot in our house. But at least he knows he's supposed to bench, even though maybe you could say for him it's a mitzvah to go to the Platniks. But still, he knows that it's better he should bench. He should bench first. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, how do we paskin in the case where you forget? Again, the very common case of people forget. So again, the Shulchan Aruch, second time we saw today, Shulchan Aruch kind of punts a little bit. Source number 20, he says, you know, it's really a machlokas. Why is it a machlokas? Because some assume, listen, we got to go like Beis Hillel. We always go like Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says you can bench in the second place. You don't have to go back. But other Rishonim say, no, but read the Gemara. The Gemara seemed to give who the upper hand? Beis Shammai, with that very powerful argument. You'd go back for your wallet. Shouldn't you go back for benching? So the Shulchan Aruch says, you know, it seems to be a machlokes. The Rambam says you could bench wherever you are in the second place. But the other Rishonim say, Yachser l'mekom l'varich. Wow. So which one is it? How do we paskin? So the answer is as follows. If you take a look at the end of the Mishnah Berurah and source number 21, we basically paskin as follows. In a case of shogeg, you forgot, it is better to go back. Nachon linhog lamaisa emlo shushas chag. If you can go back, if it's possible, it's not going to be too disruptive, it is better to go back to the place that you ate. But if, again, two qualifications, it was an accident, it slipped your mind, it wasn't deliberate, and number two is it really would be inconvenient to go back, then you are allowed to bench in that second place, which was Beis Hillel's opinion. So we're very, very conscious of Beis Shammai, it really is the better thing to do, but if it was only an accident, and it's really inconvenient to go back, then you can rely on Beis Hillel. Let me mention one last point, and with this we will conclude, which is, how do you define different places? Right. Let's say we had Shabbos lunch here, but now I'm in the kitchen. Now I'm upstairs in my room. Or let's say it's a big social hall. You're on a Shabbaton at a hotel for a Shabbos Sheva Brachos or something like that. What counts as Shinoi Makom? So here, the rules are, again, I'm going to paraphrase the sources that you have in front of you. We just don't have time to read them inside because I want to finish. But basically, we say as follows. If it's a big room, it could be a huge room, then it's all considered the same place. Okay, this is, a common misconception. People often think they have to be sitting literally, you know, you're at a restaurant or at the hotel. Sure. Have to be sitting, right, literally sitting where I ate. It's not true. Anything that's in the same room, it is considered the same place. Okay? Just to prove it to you, if you remember, I don't know when the last time you stayed till the end of a wedding is. Right? It's, you know, when you with your best friends or it's your sibling or your own wedding, or and then when it's your children's weddings, right? Or your nieces or your nephews, right? Most of your life, you know, you're happy to bug out way before the end. But there are a few special weddings where you stay till the end. What happens for Sheva Brachas? Everyone brings their chair forward. Right? They didn't do anything wrong then. It's not anything wrong. So if you're in one room, that's considered one place. What if it's the same house, same roof, but different room? So there, says the Shulchan Aruch, it depends. If you can see the second place from where you were eating, right? Shout out for open floor plans. Right? If you can see the other room, then it's okay.
See, the room is why you
ate. Even if it's technically a different room.
No, but do you have to see the spot that you ate in? Or
I would say you see the room. Even seeing the room, I think is okay, I think. Okay? If you can see it. If you can't see, right? So again, people have, you know, if you, whatever, I don't want to pick up this. There are a lot of different people's floor layouts, right? But a lot of people could be sitting in there on the couch and still see the dining room table. You're allowed to bench then, okay? Even if you didn't have it in mind when you were originally eating. But that's considered the same thing. If you can't see it, then you really can't bench. Unless, here's the third rule, not this would happen in normal life, but in theory it could. If you know you're going to need to move, then the best thing is when you're making hamotzi and originally having the bread, or the challah, have in mind, I plan on continuing eating or benching somewhere else. If you have that in mind, that's not a forgetting, that's all planned. If I have it planned, I know I'm going to have to go somewhere else. And this is what the poskim discuss, again, which was a very common minhag apparently once upon a time, people would eat somewhere with deliberate assumption they're going to go with a little dessert and have shava brachos at someone else's house. If you know you're going to do that, so you have two solutions. Either you bench in your own house and then you go. But if you knew you were planning on doing that and you had that in mind when you made hamotzi, it's totally fine even to go down the block, around the corner, three blocks away to go to Shav Brachos, eat there a little bit, and then bench. But that's because you had in mind. Again, if you didn't have in mind, the more typical case of forgetting, it's the same room, it's not a problem at all. Everyone, even Beis Shammai, that's all one room. It's a different room, but in the same house, it depends if you can see. If it's even beyond that, so then that was the machlokas that we saw. Better to go back like Beis Shammai, but if it's an accident and it's too inconvenient, you can rely on Beis Hillel and bench in the second place. Okay, but the of course, the musr for the last half of today's shiur is the age-old truism, which is that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. It is far better to bench from a bencher so you won't get ritzei. It is better to get into the habit that I don't get up from the table until I bench, etc. If you do that, your life is less complicated. We have enough things that cluttering our brain as it is to remember. You don't want to have to worry about everything Rabbi Gottlieb said the last half an hour of this year. You can forget it all if you just make sure that you get into the habit of I never get up from the table without benching. In the possibility that you're not a robot and it might happen, well, then you're going to have to remember what we learned in this year. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.